Chapter 11. Miller's answer was cut off before he could even form it. They had arrived at the low opening into the volcano, pushed roughly by Pirate, and little more gently by the other guards, but pushed nonetheless. Cook went right through. Miller, much taller, had to bend almost onto his knees to enter. Inside, Miller stood up again. Slowly, since in the dark of the tunnel where he now stood, he could not at first be sure if he could stand without hitting his head. His eyes adjusted to the dimness quickly. The elders were standing at intervals of about 50 feet, each of them holding a lighted torch. Once again, Pirate bumped him from behind. Miller didn't react, except to move off down the tunnel. It appeared to be a natural vent of the kind volcanoes sometimes developed, the ground bumpy but relatively level, polished by generations of scuffling feet. The walls and even the floor and ceiling, where Miller could see them in the reflected light of the first torch, had a dull shine to them. He rubbed a hand against the near wall and glanced at his palm. Sure enough, the wall left a dark gray smear on his hand.
"Lead," he said to Cook. "The walls contain a very high concentration of lead."
Cook nodded.
"Necessary to shield influence of artifact,"
he replied.
"But not totally effective."
Miller looked around him.
"What do you mean?"
Cook dragged his right arm slowly up level with his head and let it fall.
"Heavy."
"I noticed that before,"
Miller said. He lifted his own arm.
"It's worse."
"Closer to artifact,"
Cook said. And indeed, Miller could feel the sensation of weightiness growing on him as they dragged down the dim hallway.
And then, as he watched the nearest elder standing at the side of the tunnel with her torch, he had the strangest sensation that all motion had stopped, that they were suspended between moments.
Abruptly, with a flicker of accelerated movement, time returned, and they walked quickly past the elder.
"What just happened?"
Miller asked. Cook shrugged.
"Artifact,"
he said. Miller felt a coldness growing on the back of his neck.
"It can't be,"
he thought.
"There's got to be a perfectly good explanation." "Stress,"
he blurted out.
"Stress is causing the illusion of...
He stopped, unable to think of what to call it.
"Scientific mind accepts evidence, not conjecture."
Cook mocked him.
"But..."
Miller said, and stopped. He took a very deep breath and let it out slowly.
"There is no thought, only the breath, the chi, the movement."
It didn't work. The scientist in Miller's conscious mind was fighting frantically for a foothold, but he was falling into the rough darkness of his own subconscious. His dream mind, his lizard brain, where all such things were possible, where Cook was telling the truth and was a being from a strange future inhabiting the body of Jake Cook, and something, some artifact, was waiting for them ahead and had the nightmarish power to control time, space, and gravity! A series of blasts on a conch trumpet knocked the crazy thoughts away, and Miller breathed again.
"My mind is off. My whole system,"
he told himself.
"The stress of death approaching, that's all. It's turned on a switch in my psyche. Perfectly natural."
But what if Cook was right? Another blast came from the conches. They'd arrived at a door into what looked like a massive inner chamber. As Miller stooped and crossed into the new area, moving quickly to avoid another love tap from Pirate, he noticed a glow, as though from a natural light source. The sun must somehow be reaching them, in the bowel of the mountain. As he straightened up and looked around, he was stunned by two things. The first was finding he was right. There was a glow of natural light. He stood on a ledge that ran almost halfway around the huge inner cone of the volcano. Below him was a smooth floor of cooled volcanic rock, and above him a large circle of sky was framed in the lip of the volcano's peak. A small slice of the sun was just visible on the far side. The second jolt was an almost physical blow as he looked down at the floor beneath the ledge he and the others stood upon. The sensation of overwhelming heaviness was much more powerful here.
And again he felt a strange
flickering of time.
The chief raised an arm, and it seemed frozen there in midair for hours.
Then suddenly, with no transition, the arm was no longer in the air, and the chief was standing several feet from where she'd been.
Miller blinked. Another thump fell on his back, and he turned.
Slowly.
Then quickly.
To see Pirate snarling at him. Pirate pointed his spear down at the floor below the ledge and said something.
His words were harsh and low.
And then whipped out with the speed and pitch of a chipmunk.
But the meaning was clear, as was the man's triumphant sneer. Miller turned and gazed down. There, below him, where the rock floor within the volcano stretched away for about 50 yards, he saw a strange, dully flickering sphere. It seemed about twice the size of a basketball and resembled a giant ball bearing, as if it had been machined. Its color was shifty, uncertain, but nearly always dull and pulsing with a strange light. Or was it just the reflection of the torches above it? Miller wondered, and how was it possible for it to reflect when it was so dull? Except now it wasn't dull, it was, what? Shimmering. Then not, then, for less than a heartbeat, alive with brilliant color that hadn't been seen there at all before. And then it seemed to be almost everything all at once, impossible to describe, impossible to look at without a sense not just of disorientation, but of the destruction of all meaningful reference points, time as well as space. Up, down, there, later, all these concepts lost their meaning in the presence of this... this... what?
Artifact!
Breathed Cook beside him, sounding impressed for the first time since they'd left Runapawake.
Artifact!
He repeated. The thing changed again, while somehow staying the same. And then, with an intense and sudden jolt, the conch horns came again. But now he could see the sound rushing at him like hard, rounded stones. Which again turned back into the notes of the trumpet. Miller felt sick to his stomach. He had no idea what was going on, and for the first time since he'd been a boy, he felt afraid. Not of impending death, nor of a very great power he could not understand, but of what that thing on the rocky floor below might mean. Cook was telling the truth. The thing was the artifact, a primal object that ordered and controlled all of time and space, coveted by two future powers and placed here by one group so that the other could outmaneuver him into taking it. In fact, he was so overwhelmed by the implications of what he'd experienced that it was quite a while, or was it, before he noticed what covered the rest of the floor beneath the ledge. Bones. Human bones. Hundreds of skeletons. Partial skeletons, skulls, femurs, piles of teeth and finger bones, all scattered across the floor as if they'd been emptied out of a giant box and flung down like dice to roll and slid to a stop wherever they could by random chance. The bones were in all stages of decomposition. Looking down from where he stood, he guessed the most recent were only a few years old, while the oldest were no more than piles of dust still imbued with the faintest remnant of human shape. There were very few relics among the bones, no scraps of cloth or ornaments. It was as though they'd all been picked clean. Far from the artifact, toward what seemed to be a small opening leading off the floor, there was a scattering of spears and throwing-sized rocks, and a large cluster of bones that seemed to have been felled by the weapons. The rest of the skeletons looked like they'd simply been hammered flat while running. The bones were fanned out from the artifact, none any closer to it than 15 feet. The only thing Miller saw below, other than the bones, spears, and the artifact, were four rectangular panels of a strange material he couldn't identify. They were clearly man-made, but from this distance, it was impossible to say what they were. And at this point, it didn't really matter. The conch trumpet sounded again. Miller looked up. The chief was frozen with their arms in the air. The light from above ran down the spectrum to red, and he felt the artifact flicker a tentacle out at him. The trumpet blast came at him like the taste of a coppery mango, and the murmur of the crowd around him was like sour gumballs. Pirate grabbed his arm with fingers that sounded like marbles in a grinder and pushed him forward with a sound like a wave hitting a pile of wine glasses.
Artifact!
Had Cook said this several minutes ago?
Or was it only now?
As the tentacle of strangeness retreated, that Miller could register the words as his senses unscrambled. Again, he felt Pirate's fingers on his arm. Another of the warriors had Cook in a similar, gentler grip. The chief called out something with a rising inflection. The crowd yelled back in unison. The chief nodded and, still speaking, turned toward the artifact. She waved an arm three times. The crowd murmured something with each wave, and then they were all looking at him. Pirate squeezed his arm, trying to twist it back as he hissed something in Miller's ear. One of the words was the same as something the chief had said, and Miller recognized it as a Polynesian word with the K transposed to a T and the R to a B. It meant bare or uncovered. He did not have to spend much time trying to work it out, for Pirate immediately began to tug at his shirt. Miller had had enough. He turned and knocked Pirate's arm down with the cutting edge of his hand. It stung. Pirate hissed with the pain of it and glared at Miller. He started to raise his spear, but one of the other warriors placed a hand on his shoulder and murmured something in a reproving tone of voice. Pirate kept his hate-filled eyes locked on Miller, but he nodded and backed up half a step. He motioned with the spear for Miller to undress. Miller glanced around. Every eye in the cavern was on him and Cook. Two of the elders were chanting. One of them dribbled his fingers across the head of a small drum, while the other held a stick tipped with feathers up to a torch and lit it on fire, waving the stick to the four cardinal compass points. Cook began to undress. With only a slight hesitation, so did Miller. There was no point in resisting for mere body modesty. He was totally powerless, surrounded and outnumbered by these people to an overwhelming degree. If they wanted to, through sheer weight of numbers, they could pin him to the ground and strip him in a matter of seconds. Besides, there was a more interesting problem at the moment. Since none of the skeletons had even a scrap of fabric on or near them, the fact that he and Cook were being forced to strip probably meant that they were about to be sent down to the artifact, if he were going to survive the ordeal, and he had every intention of doing so. He needed an answer, quickly. He leaned his head toward Cook.
"What killed?"
he asked. He heard his voice slither down the scale to a crawl, and then saw it change to particles. Cook was surrounded by millions of tiny globs of light, like small fluorescent BBs. The globs coalesced into the taste of lemon pudding and dribbled into Cook's ears. Cook turned to him with a movement that smelled of hot machine oil. Four highly polished marble cubes cascaded from Cook's mouth and dopplered at Miller, turning into a cold blue rain that fell on him as...
"The artifact!"
Miller shook his head. The light in the room slid back up the spectrum, and he was hearing normally again.
"How?"
he said.
"How did the artifact kill them?"
Cook opened his mouth. It stayed open for a long time, but nothing came out.
"There was no sound, no motion, no time."
Unclear.
Cook finally said as time unfroze.
Too many options.
Shit.
Miller said.
Main probability.
Cook said.
What?
Promise, Tony Miller. Promise to see artifact to safe position.
Safe where?
Miller asked.
Tahiti, real time. GECO contact at airport.
How do I find them?
But before Cook could answer, the guards grabbed him by the elbows and dropped him off the ledge. End of chapter.